Hello, my name is Lori Ayer. I am the principal consultant at the Galicia Group, which is located here in the Bay Area. I'm here to give you the public library perspective, but which is a little bit different from the academic librarian point of view. But before we go any further, I just want to say that I have friends on MySpace that are buildings, library buildings. And if it weren't for my library building friends, I would have gotten very few happy birthdays. I was amazed on my birthday morning. I woke up to all this email as, "Happy birthday, Lori!" And it was, you know, the Lansing Public Library. All these people, I mean, seem like people to me. So, you know, it has possibilities for being more humane. Let's see, how do I advance? This way? No? Just the mouse? What I want to talk about is Public Library 2.0. And basically, when I say Public Library 2.0, what I'm talking about is what public libraries are trying to move towards. And so what I would say the public libraries are trying to do is to provide a library that is more user-oriented and convenient. Like I think Matt said, you know, instead of expecting the user to work around the library workflows, we're trying to convince the librarians that they need to work around the user's workflow. Also, that services are interactive, that we take advantage of the fact that there are social networking tools now where we can actually get information from the user and tie that back into the material that we're feeding back to the to our customers. For example, I think Matt mentioned that some of the fun things that are going on with tagging. I think of one place like the University of Pennsylvania and their pen tags, and then there's another place that I saw that I liked the implementation they did, the University of Huddersfield or something in the UK. And they have these really nice tag clouds that have been built by their users, and that's a way to get into the library catalog. So if you really can't deal or don't want to deal with the whole search engine thing, you can just kind of make your way through the tag cloud and get right into resources based on the ways that other users are describing library material. The service model is changing. We're having more and more of these self-service options, but the key is to not turn the library into a place that doesn't have librarians, but it's a place where the librarians are not just scanning books all day long. It's a place where the librarians that are there actually provide a really useful service. So the more users can do for themselves, the more we can then be available. And they expect to be, one of the things that happens in a public library is you expect to be able to get help from these, from the librarians that are there. So they can do that more and more as patrons can do more for themselves. The libraries are going out to where the user is, as everybody's mentioned. We're putting websites out on MySpace. And I would disagree about them being still a one-way communication when the library sites I've seen out on MySpace actually are allowing two-way communication. Some of them are offering IM reference service from their MySpace page. They're using the bulletin feature to send material out. And when you become someone's friend, a lot of people make the library their friend, then they're getting their bulletins, God forbid, you know, the things you're finding out from these things. But you know, and there's the whole sending comments back and forth, which is the primary means of communicating on MySpace. So there is a lot of two-way communication going on there. Library records are getting out into the world through efforts that... I just spaced your first name.
Matt.
Are you guys... that Matt shared with everybody. And then I like the Flickr library websites. If you haven't seen those can be kind of fun. And of course, YouTube has some really great library videos. If you've ever gone in and just like type library or fun, I recommend typing Wii, the new game, W-I-I, and library at YouTube, and you'll see some very strange thing at San Francisco Public Library. Libraries are also trying to make themselves fun places. So there's something for everyone. There's gaming, as I've described, there's Wii games going on, there's Dance Dance Revolution, there's all sorts of really fun things going on. I mean, not the library I grew up in, but You know, it turns out it's a really great place to be, and you know, the idea that you can actually eat and drink in a library is really kind of coming true, which, I mean, I don't know about you, but when's the last time you tried to write a paper without a cup of coffee? I mean, it's pretty much impossible for me to do research without, you know, food and beverage of some kind. I mean, I'd have to be, like, hiding it in secret thermoses or something. But we're also maintaining the traditional library environment by creating these click-free zones. Have you heard of that in the public library? So those of you that are tired of people talking on the cell phone nearby or punching in text messages all the time or even the sound of clicking on a keyboard. So the library is setting aside little spaces or maybe even big spaces that have nice lighting, they're quiet, they're real, you know, nice wood and things like that. And that's the click-free zone where people can go to enjoy the peace and quiet and kind of the old image we have of what our library is like. The problem with public libraries is that we have the old patrons and the new patrons. And then we also have a whole range of economic levels of users. Public libraries have lots of users that are very comfortable with technology and that can run, you know, circles around the librarians. And then we also have the people who are coming into the public library because they know nothing about computers. Maybe they're a senior citizen who just decided that they had to make their prescription drug plan collection, and the only way they can do it is online, and they've never been online. So they're coming into the public library and expecting to get help doing that. The users expect instant gratification. They'll come in and think and ask, you know, they found a book in the catalog and they don't understand why they can't have it tomorrow, and they get kind of cranky that they can't. At the same time, you know, there's the people who are very patient and used to waiting for things because the only services they get are free, and when you only can get free services, you get lousy service. So, you know, they're not. There's a class of people who are not putting pressure on the libraries to evolve beyond that slow service at the same time that we get the instant gratification people. There's the users that prefer downloading something, that want to get it via email, that want everything in an electronic format. And there's the people who really, you know, shudder at the idea that we can't browse new titles, that we can't walk through the stacks and look at the interesting covers on the books. So, you know, there's both of those. And then there's the users that have absolutely no time to, you know, fuss with interlibrary loan or talking to human beings or, you know, parking the car and walking into the library. And then in contrast to that, there's the people that have no money. So they may or may not have time, but they certainly don't have money to get over some of those hurdles of not being able to pay for things that would be convenient. But there is one thing that they both have in common. Can anybody guess what that might be? Well, the public, yeah. Well, what I mean is Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. What do they have in common? One need in particular. You're getting close. John Stewart says that all the time. I love when he does that. Yeah, nobody gets the subscription databases. I mean, maybe in the academic libraries where people hopefully are taking some classes and learning how to use these things, they're getting some use. But public libraries are spending ridiculous amounts of money on these subscription databases, and sad to say, very few people are using them, or at least they're not using them in the way that they should be used. But I'm going to talk about that a little bit more later. Let's go back to the situation of the plight of the public library. So when we talk, does everybody know what the long tail is? Has everybody talked about it enough? All right, so a power curve is shaped like this, the classic power curve. It's got a big head and then it trails off like that. That's the long tail is the part that trails off approaching zero but never quite meeting it, right? So there's been all this talk about the long tail because product or companies like Netflix, who are essentially or are virtually online, or they provide the key part of their services online, they have created a business model that works for them where they sell products from the long tail. So what I mean by that is the blockbusters are represented in the head of the tail. And I would say Walmart is a classic business that services the long tail. You walk into Walmart and all the kind of basic, mediocre material that everybody wants is there. So they're going, they're selling, they're making their money on the volume thing. The long tail is all those funny little movies that we, you know, the secret movie that you saw that no one else has ever seen, but it's your favorite movie. Well, now Netflix can make money giving you access to that funky little strange movie that you like, because there's enough other people in the world who also like that same funky little movie. So they are servicing the long tail. The problem for libraries, public libraries specifically, is that they have to service the long tail and the short head. In other words, both ends of this curve are the realm of the public libraries. They're getting in the blockbuster movies, the top seller books, the Harry Potters, Until the Cows Come Home, are packed into the public libraries. At the same time, what's out on the shelves? The things that are hardly ever circulated but are valuable. It's those nuggets. It's that special, you know, it's like the special movie you can get from Netflix. And you don't want to lose those things either. The problem is libraries are not, because of trying to do both things, they're not doing either as well as they could. One of the problems I see with the public libraries is their commitment to free services. Because they're not able to service some of their customers without charging them. But they don't want to charge them because they think that's very wrong for public libraries. And they're sure that if we start charging for any services, then the people who are getting the free services are suddenly going to suffer for the services that they get. I have to say, you might be able to tell that I'm not a proponent of this approach to things, and it reminds me a little bit of the gay marriage argument. Somehow, if you let gay people marry, then it weakens the institution or the heterosexual marriage somehow. Like, I'm not quite get how the two work together, because if you remain committed to the free services, you're committed to the free services, and you can still offer expedited delivery or services over and above what your core services are and not have to make anyone suffer for it. So let's set aside that value for a moment, and let's talk about Dr. Jekyll's needs that I think are not getting met. He's not using the he or she is not getting home delivery services, which would make all the difference in the world for him, because he doesn't have time to go, you know, driving down to the library, standing in line, and blah, 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 blah. He's a very busy man, very, very, very busy. And he would pay an arm and a leg if he could go to the library, pick the book he wanted, and have it magically appear the next day, or even a few days later, as long as he doesn't have to take that extra time. Dr. Jekyll might be interested in buying items through his library. I've many times thought I'd rather be buying through my library and sending a little kickback to my local library than just buying directly from Amazon.com. I figure they're helping me find what I want. Why not give them a little kickback for that effort? The idea that libraries should be queuing items and sending them automatically and not offering fines using the Netflix model of, you know, let me build the books that I want to read, and then as I read them, they just turn up in my mailbox, and then I'll return them back as I'm done and just kind of keep the flow going. I'd like to see fines debited automatically. If you have to charge fines, why not just have them come off of your e-commerce account? So those are some of the things that libraries could be doing if they were willing to deal with the fee thing. But right now, they don't have very good ways to do that. There's not a good tie-in to e-commerce. So I was assuming that a lot of the people here are publishers, so I thought that I would come to you with some ideas of how you might be able to help the public library specifically a little bit better on the theory that you do want to sell your books. One idea was to offer options to sell directly to patrons from the library websites. In other words, help them with this hurdle of not being able to offer some of the e-commerce services themselves. Maybe you could have some kind of RSS feed or something, or maybe it would just be limited to holdings that the library actually has. But if the idea is that I, as a user, could get the RSS feed from the company that sells the library books, and then I could just buy the books directly from that publisher. And again, maybe there would be some kickback to the local library for helping make that connection happen. I think that both would benefit because the publishers would get more sales and the libraries would get the goodwill. I like the idea of using RSS feeds to make new titles that are available on library websites and harnessing that feedback from the public for items that they would like the library to buy. You know, why not say, oh yeah, there's a new book that's from the bookseller, why don't you get that, and you know, kind of get that information from the public. That would be a way to help the libraries. More pre-processing options would be nice so that libraries did less of that clerical work. Direct delivery, I'd like to be able to get my patrons to get an item directly from the publisher and ship to their home so that I can kind of stay out of it and just serve as the requester. I've never heard of this idea, but I'd like to see book buybacks. Like I said, when you buy 500 copies of Harry Potter, what do you do with, you know, the 450 that you don't need after the first year that the book's been out? Seems like there could be a way to buy them back or maybe lease them and then send them off to, you know, I don't know, another country or something that doesn't mind having secondhand books. More and more print on demand would be excellent. So that our public library users, could actually get items in whatever format they want, or digitize on demand. Why not have the publishers do that instead of the libraries, who are actually trying to do some of those things? Basically, these things could be built into the publishing life cycle as far as I'm concerned. You know, I want to put the burden on the publisher instead of on the public library to make some of these things happen. Just generally making the books available in multiple formats right from the start. I think we've touched on some of the suggestions I wanted to make already about the journals, but since nobody understands this whole subscription database, I'd really like to see them go away entirely and make discovery possible for people, access easy, and make it affordable to buy individual articles. I was thinking 99 cents for a journal article, but 22 cents is even better. Yeah. I don't know what that extra fee you were mentioning was, but let's get rid of that and just go with the 99 cents or the 22 cents for an item. I think that there's been other people talking about the journals and iTunes as a viable model, which is, you know, I, as a user, I want to go to the journal store or whatever, and I want my search to include journal titles, not titles, but journal articles. Like, all of the layers that you have to get through to find the specific article that you want are just crazy. So why not charge for the getting part but not charging for the discovery part? I think OCLC obviously has figured out that that's the way to go, and I hope that the journal bundlers will figure that out also. One of the main points that I want people to keep in mind when they're thinking about the public library is there's a lot of really great things going on, and if you have connections, you can get some really incredible things. If you're going to the university, you can get access to these incredible online resources. In the public library, the only authentication available to people is their library card. So at the point where some of these subscription databases or other resources start costing so much money that the libraries can't purchase them for their customers, especially if they still insist that they can only provide them for free so they won't buy them at all, then all the people who use the public libraries have no access to this information. It's already problematic with governmental information that people who don't have computers, who rely on the public library for access to the internet for computer literacy skills, if they can't come to the public library and get those things, they're out of luck. I think that the people who are providing some of these resources need to keep in mind that the deals you make with the public libraries have to be different from the deals you make with academic institutions and special libraries. We're servicing a group of people who don't have money, who don't have resources. We see some of the libraries closing, and it's really leaving some people very much out in the cold. I wanted to make a comment about RFID tags, and sorry about my title there, but there's some very exciting work going on with RFID, and I'd like to put a plug in for the importance of publishers working closely with the RFID standards that are being developed at the NISO level. And basically what they're doing is they're working on the interoperability of RFID tags so that when a library buys an RFID tag, which is essentially like a barcode except for it can be read through radio waves, it doesn't require all librarians to scan or the patrons to scan, and it makes a whole bunch of services a lot more efficient if we could get them in all the books. And I would like them to be in all the books because they were put there by the book publisher. But for that to happen, they have to be interoperable and they have to work up and down the chain. In other words, the same RFID tag that gets put in by the publisher, they should be able to use it for some level of their workflow, and then when libraries get it, they should be able to use it not only in their library, but also in all of their transactions when they loan the item out to other libraries and other systems are using it. So there's a whole bunch of interoperability that has to happen. And also, you don't want the RFID tag to be read by the grocery store, so there has to be a way to ensure that security is in place and that privacy is protected. But RFID tags have some great potential, but I'd like to see the publishers get very much involved in supporting that standardization. On most of your chairs, we put a thing called the Rethinking Resource Sharing Manifesto. And it's a great document. It shows some really forward-thinking work that's being done by a group of librarians. There's a website called rethinkingresourcesharing.org. If you can get that typed in correctly, you'll find it. But I wanted to draw your attention to just a couple items in the Resource Sharing Manifesto. As you can see, this group is looking very much at the issue of fulfilling the get it option, you know, the helping people with discovery, making sure that they get the thing that they want, that they don't hit any dead ends, that they actually, just because my local library doesn't have it, like using the Open WorldCat model, yes, I want this book, I'd rather get it right here at my library, but if I can't get it from my library, I'd like to get it from my consortium. Well, if I can't get it from the consortium, I'd like to borrow it from someone even further away. If I can't get it there, then yes, I want to buy it at Amazon.com. You know, basically meet the user's request, and if you have to charge for some services, go ahead and do it. The idea is that anything that is findable should be gettable one way or another. And it's important to be able to offer these services at a fair price rather than say, no, we can't do that for you. So this group is taking those positions, and I think it's some really good work that's happening with the librarians. Closing thought. Basically, I'm urging you to help the public libraries extend their discovery and fulfillment opportunities. I'm really happy with the work that OCLC is doing. And however, we don't want OCLC to be the only game in town, so I hope all of you will, you publishers out there, will continue to help libraries with that part of their work. Thank you.